Hello, this is Bixby. Welcome to the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast. Here is your host, Roger Kibbe.
Hello, Bixby Developer Chat listeners. Today, we're doing something a bit different. We're going to turn the microphone around, so to speak, and we're going to talk to each of the Viv developer evangelists. That's myself, my colleagues John Aglietto, and Jonathan Pan. It will take turns answering some questions, talking about our backgrounds, our career paths, what led us to work for Viv Labs, and we'll tell you what gets us excited about voice and where we see the future going. So let's get started, and we're just going to do this kind of round table, talk to each other. So John or Jonathan, why don't one of you introduce yourself?
Sure, I guess I can go first. So probably for the sake of this podcast, yeah, we'll refer to me as Jonathan instead of John. Otherwise, I think John and I are going to get a little confused if we
keep
saying John. So I'm a technical evangelist for Bixby, and you know, it's been a pretty awesome time working with these two guys, and I have four too many cats. Yes, four too many cats.
So I can't call you John without the H, your Twitter handle?
You could, but you know, it's a bit cumbersome, I feel.
We'll call you Jonathan. Okay. But his Twitter handle is John without the H. Hey, John, what about you?
Yeah, John Aglietto here. I'm a developer evangelist as well for Viv Labs. So working with you guys, you know, it's the three of us out there in the community kind of building this project with all the developers out there, this voice project. And so, you know, it's been good for the last couple of years. I've worked for Viv doing developer evangelism, but I guess we'll get into it a little bit. Our background's been doing evangelism for a while now, so we'll be able to kind of talk through that.
And hey, everyone, Roger Kibbe. You may know me from past podcasts, but yeah, a developer evangelist, and just been super exciting and fun. I think I joined like a week before John did, so we've had some similar experiences along the way, and just been a lot of fun going out and talking to the community and developers and designers and companies about Bixby and seeing the platform grow. And this is just an incredibly both challenging and rewarding job, and I love it. So, hey, Jonathan. Tell me about your background. Where were you born? Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? What was your major? Tell me your background before you really started a career.
Yeah, sure. I was born in Tucson, Arizona, and then I grew up in Colorado. So I never went to California until college, which I went to the University of California, Davis, and studied economics and physics. And yeah, I mean, pre-work experience, you know, my life wasn't too exciting. I just had the typical American suburban life in, you know, Colorado and stuff. But what was really interesting and struck me about California was that the Christmases here are nothing like the Christmases you grew up with anywhere else in the country, pretty much. You know, there's no snow, there's nothing like that. So out here, it was kind of a shock to me to see how, like, American cartoon-like the Christmases here were like. When you grow up, you watch all the shows and you see what Christmas is like, but no, not out here. So that's one of my first things about California.
Ah, so Christmases are different here. Indeed.
Very different.
Many things are different in California. Hey, John, how about yourself?
So I was born in San Francisco. I've lived here my entire life in the Bay Area. I went to the same alma mater as you, Cal.
Go Bears. So
over in Berkeley, go Bears. Yeah, exactly right. My degree was in computer science. So I started out in mathematics when I first went to college. That's what I kind of applied for and started out for. And when I was doing mathematics for a while and realized kind of very shortly into it, I'm never going to be great at this. You know, I'm adequate at this at best. And just kind of found a computer science course that was an elective. And I was like, well, I've been doing computers, playing with computers, and we'll get into kind of backgrounds of my first computer. I had an Apple II Plus. So that tells you how old I am. And I worked on a TRS-80. So back when I was 10 years old. So I had been doing computers in my childhood prior to college, but never really thought of it as a career or anything. You know, it was not a career per se back then as it is right now. You know, it's just a thing people did. But I took this computer science class, and it was in the language Lisp. So if you guys remember that language, Lisp. And I fell in love with it. Yeah. And it was like, this is really great. And then I took another and another and another and found that I had an aptitude for it, in much different than mathematics. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. And it was kind of a stumbled into my passion situation in university. And so I wound up with a computer science degree.
Awesome. You know, we both went to Berkeley, and I went in and I was going to be a physics major. And I got to tell you, you know, I thought I was pretty darn smart and hot stuff coming out of high school. And going to Berkeley is a humbling experience in a lot of ways. You're like, wow, there are just some kids who are just smarter and have worked harder than I have. But I grew up in Fairfax, 20 miles north of San Francisco, West Marin, if you're a local. So I'm a local boy as well. I've lived all around the Bay Area, and I think it's a great place to live. So I went to Berkeley. I was going to be a physics major, went for a year, and then I didn't know what I was doing, and I ended up dropping out. And I ended up dropping out for 5 years and rediscovered myself and figured out who the heck I was as a person, and then went back with a completely different mentality.
Wow!
And ended up majoring in psychology because I always thought human behavior was super interesting, and I majored in that. But it's interesting, John, when you talked about Lisp, because I took some CS classes on the side for fun. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was an introductory CS class and it was in Lisp. And I thought that was so much fun, even if my mind kind of bent when we got, you know, into serious recursion.
Right.
Right. And you're like, whoa, it's happening, but I'm not quite sure because this function has called itself like 100 times.
Well, the courses at Cal have been the same for ages. So the introductory computer science for non-computer science majors that's taught in Lisp is CS3. And then I remember the physics courses too, 7, A, B, and C. Man, those were hard. Those were tough courses.
Yeah, I think it was physics 7. I think that was for majors. And I was like, okay, I've now been humbled.
Yeah. Those are not easy.
So yeah, but psychology, thought I was going to go to law school. Ended up talking to a lot of lawyers who were like, you'll like law school, you won't like the profession, which made me, you know, have second thoughts, and kind of stumbled into technology, even though it's something I'd always been doing, because I went to this, back then it was Anderson Consulting, now it's Accenture, one of the recruiting events on campus, met some people and ended up working for them to kind of start my professional career. But hey, John, it's funny, you were talking about an Apple as your first computer. My first computer was an Atari 400.
Oh.
And actually before that at school, they had these Commodore PETs. And back then, the only thing you could do, you'd turn it on and there'd be a prompt and you could only write a basic program. And so what we used to do is you write basic programs. And of course, what we wanted to do was play games, right? Because back in those days, you went to the arcade and I spent a lot of money, what money I had on arcade games and going and playing. So we wanted to build that in the computer. So we wrote these basic programs and tried to do that. And there was this magazine called Compute that they list like pages of basic, and you go and you type it all in, you get all excited. And of course you run it and break most of the time. And then it would be kind of a bit of disappointment. You know, the hype was beyond the reality. And then we got so into it. And the first really geeky thing I did was we decided the Commodore is a 6502 chip. We wrote 6502 assembly games, which was, in some cases, ways the hardest core programming I've ever done, because writing an assembly is pretty interesting and difficult.
Oh, yeah.
But we just wanted the game. We wanted that arcade. Instead of paying a quarter, we wanted to have it on that computer, both at school, and then I had the Atari 400, and that was also 6502, and tried to write an assembly and games there. So, you know, because games were all the fun and all the rage, just like they are today. How about you? Hey, Jonathan.
We're the similar age. Jonathan, different kind of story.
I've not heard of this stuff, you know.
What was your first technology? What was the first thing you did?
The first technology thing I did was making custom maps in, I'd say, StarCraft 1. So that's my first foray into programming. And even, I think, by today's standards, that's probably considered cryptic. You know, by like the Gen Zers and stuff, they're like, StarCraft, what, right? You know, so yeah, I mean, that was my first experience in college. You know, I do think like a lot of us probably tried building games like when we started programming. So in college, I made stuff for a fighter factory. And, you know, it's just like this custom fighting game thing where you can make characters and then make them fight each other. So that was something that I did too. But yeah, nothing as like old as, you know, what you guys were talking about. That's for sure.
Well, if you look at what makes a great evangelist, and it's super interesting, having hired and worked with so many evangelists over the years, you're going to hear the same type of story again and again and again. It's this individual, it's this person who gets fascinated by technology, some aspect of games. A lot of people are hardware tinkerers, you know, they like to build the hardware and those sort of things, but one way or another, they get fascinated by an element of technology, and it just becomes their passion. And, you know, looking for that passion for technology is almost the highest order bit when you say who's going to be an evangelist, who's going to be a successful evangelist, whether it's voice or games or whether you're a VR evangelist, cloud evangelist, it really doesn't make a difference. But you have to be super passionate about that technology. And that's how people get into it. You know, they grab something they're interested in and they just run with it. And then they find that that's something they want to do for the rest of their life.
So how about you, John? So that's what leads to a successful evangelist. You've been doing evangelism for a while. So you were a computer science major at Cal.
Yes.
And then what happened?
So I got a traditional developer job. I was a developer for years, just slinging code, you know, just write code, C++, C code professionally. And this is back prior, you know, leading into it, you know, so we quickly, this was an era, you think now was an era of startups, but back then was an era of startups too, right? We had lots of startups and everybody was kind of working for startups, and it was really a wonderful experience back then. I mean, I still highly recommend it to people now. It's just working for a startup because I learned so many things outside of being a developer. It's like today you're writing code, C++. The next day you're doing database queries. The next day you're working on, you know, distributed systems. And the next day you're wiring a Cat 5 cable or pulling cable or configuring a Windows server, right? So you just get this, we used to get this very broad base of experience. And it's probably similar to what you had, Roger, because you know, you get this broad base of experience working for lots of startups, and then you get into consulting after that, right? Because you just have this kind of general capability that becomes valuable over time. So I worked as a developer and an architect for a lot of years, ran a services organization for a number of years, and I'll tell you kind of how I got into evangelism after you tell me about your services career.
So like I said, graduated from college, ready to go to law school, and then, you know, abrupt halt. What do? And so I went to work for Accenture. And, you know, I actually think, so I agree with you, John, working for a startup is great. I also really think working for one of those big consulting firms is great. Because they really want to, they train you, and two, they kind of throw you to the wolves.
Yeah.
Right? And so it was like, boom, throw you to the wolves. And they teach you that back then, he teached you how to code in C. But I got in this internet division, which was pretty early, and we were actually working with like Java 1.0 and writing code and doing some things. And so a lot of travel involved. I spent a year in San Diego, a year and a half in Detroit, and ended up traveling a lot, but learning a lot because it's not just I was a pure developer, but it's also like I had to go talk to the client, which terrified the heck out of me at that age. And then I got used to it. And then left to join a startup consulting firm in the dot-com boom. And yeah, that was a crazy time of startups. You're absolutely right, John. It was, you know, and everybody thought, you know, I thought I'd be kicking sand on the beach, right? And I was like, okay, if we go public and our options go wild, I'll be done, right? And of course, this was early 2000 when they like filed to go public, kind of the worst timing in kind of modern history, if you look at what happened after that. But yeah, and then went on, that startup blew up, went on to be an architect, worked for Gap Inc. for 13 years as an architect, and then really on technology strategy. And then I'll get to what I did. I left Gap Inc., my kind of cozy corporate job, to go found a voice startup, but I'll get to that. I want to hear from you, Jonathan. What about you? Post-college, what was your career path?
Sure. So I started off working as a liaison between a Chinese manufacturing plant for electronic cigarettes and then various clients in the United States. And that was interesting since I used to be a lot better at Chinese. I think I still speak it, but you know, it was kind of, I guess, a fit for me because I could help coordinate these clients to order their products in China and give them a friendly face over here to interact with, which a lot of, you know, customers liked. And then after that, I worked in the marijuana vaporizer industry. So basically, that electronic cigarette manufacturer wanted to dip their toes into, you know, manufacturing vaporizers for this booming industry that we see with all the medical cannabis and everything. So yeah, then I was slinging vaporizers around here in the Bay Area for a while. You know, a lot of hash oil manufacturers and things like this, and you know, various people that use butane extraction and CO2 extraction to get out their oils. They wanted products to sell it in, and it was very profitable, a very interesting time in my life. Definitely not the usual crowd that I hung out with, at least on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, I met some lifelong friends doing that, so at least there was that. But I always knew that that wasn't really where my passion lied. And sorry about my cat, if you can hear him meowing in the background. But so then I stopped working in that industry and then took a coding boot camp, which I did for 6 months, and learned how to do full stack web development. Then I just freelanced for a while, you know, making very little at the time. But, you know, I knew it was that's kind of the path I needed to take in order to get some experience under my belt. And then finally landed a contracting gig at Samsung Research America, where I ended up with Viv Labs eventually after participating in a Bixby hackathon. So I kind of started, my coding career has been less than 2 years now. So it's still a pretty fresh chapter in my life. And I was greatly humbled and honored, I guess, how I just ended up where I am today. So yeah, I'm super happy to be here. And, you know, the coding bootcamp was one of the better choices I've made in terms of my career.
So I remember meeting you at that Bixby hackathon. Can you tell us, what did you build? And what did you dress as that day?
Oh, sure. So I think like many people, I built a Pokédex, right? Because, you know, among a lot of people like me that grew up playing Pokemon and stuff, it was easy to tap into both the passion for coding and the passion for Pokemon. And, you know, I just spent all my free time during that period working on a Pokédex for Bixby, which is actually live on the Bixby Marketplace today. You can check it out. It's called, I think, Pokédex Sun and Moon, because, you know, it's based on the Sun and Moon games. So, you know, I didn't want people to think it worked for Sword and Shield, because it doesn't. Anyway, that point aside, I built a Pokédex, and, you know, I wanted it to be like the experience that you got from the original Pokemon anime, where Ash would just point his Pokédex to someone and ask, what's that Pokemon, right? Now, it doesn't have the visual elements in terms of like the Pokédex looking at the Pokemon and telling you based on computer vision, but instead it had the voice element, right? And you'd be like, oh, what Pokemon, you know, looks like this, or what Pokemon, or tell me about the Pokemon Pidgey or whatever. And then the Pokédex would then tell you about that Pokemon. So that was kind of my goal, was to recreate that experience. And, you know, I think it works for the most part. And I came in there wearing some shirts that I made with a hat that said BixbyDex on it, kind of over the top. And then me and my girlfriend at the time, now she's my wife, but we made a video that, you know, showed off BixbyDex and stuff. So yeah, that was that's what I did for that hackathon. It was a really fun time in my life. You know,
you both came to the attention of Viv Labs by winning a hackathon. You won one too, right, Roger?
Yeah, I did. It was in fall 2018. I'd been doing my voice startup and so my own independent voice consulting, heard about Bixby and thought, hey, it's a new platform, let me go check it out. And then, yeah, so I built this really simple thing. It's actually on the Bixby Marketplace. It's called Green Planet. Really simple, but I think pretty useful for voice. You can say, you're really asking what bin do you want to put something into? You want to put it in recycling? You want to put it in compost? You want to put it in the trash? Something my kids always ask me. And I thought, hey, that's pretty good for voice because you're sitting there in front of them. You're not going to go pull your phone out or you're not going to go run to the web or Google and find that. So I built that, entered the hackathon, and then there was the top five of us. I came to Samsung Developers Conference and actually had to get up on stage and give a 3-minute talk on what we built. So did that, ended up winning that hackathon. And that's really what led me. I met a bunch of the Bixby team. I met Adam Shire. I was super inspired by Adam and his vision. And I had been kind of looking for opportunities and started talking more with Adam and more with the team. And I really liked everyone I talked to, and the rest is history. Then in January 2019, I joined Viv Labs. How about, John, you joined right after I did. I know, yes. Like a week after. What was going on right before you joined, or what led you to Viv?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I had been working at Microsoft in a couple of different capacities, but mostly leading a developer evangelism team in the U.S. So, you know, I had no clue what evangelism was, right? I said, like I told you before, I was a developer and an architect, and I had been doing architecture for a long time. And so I did my own startup, and we probably don't have time to get into all the details of that. But, you know, we were doing, this is early 2000s. I was getting into some interesting things that were new at the time that are old hat now, machine learning and IoT particularly. And I kind of finished doing that, and it went really well. And things went well for the startup. And I said, okay, I'm going to look around and say, well, what should I do now? And this is the time when cloud was starting to come out. And I was looking at technologies, and I said, what technology is the next kind of wave that I want to get into? And it was like, well, I want to learn about cloud. I want to get into this cloud thing. So I looked around, and Microsoft used to have this role called architect evangelist. They didn't have it anymore. But it was written up exactly like an architect, which I was. And so I applied. And that's what I found out about this evangelism thing. And then they're like, well, it's an architect, but we also go talk to other people and we talk about technology and we get up on stage and we work with the community. And I'm like, okay, I can do all that because I had been in services. So I kind of had a little bit of that soft skill capability. And I got really lucky. Over the course of my career, I've had these wonderful mentors, you know, and now I am one to others as a result. But, you know, I had these wonderful mentors, and one is a guy who kind of almost invented evangelism, did worldwide evangelism for Sun Microsystems in Java, a guy by the name of Matt Thompson, who kind of taught me about evangelism over the course of 10 years at Microsoft. And so I had been doing that. And we launched a lot of platforms, some successful, some not. You know, we launched Azure when it was just compute, storage, and networking. And we were launching Windows 8 and Windows Phone and just a whole bunch of different platforms. And the folks at Viv reached out to me and said, hey, you know, we've got this challenge. We're launching this platform. We're launching the Bixby platform. We're launching this marketplace. And it seemed like a very exciting, interesting opportunity to kind of from the ground up, launch this platform from scratch and build out this developer evangelism team that we are all now on. And like you, Roger, I met Adam and was very inspired by Adam's vision and thought, wow, this is a guy, you know, I would like to work for and I would like to spend more time understanding because he's quite a guy and quite massively intelligent, very, very, very interesting. And so it was just kind of a combination of things, the challenge of launching this platform and being the underdog to big competitors like Amazon and Google, as well as the team at Viv, and kind of the allure of getting back to that small startup environment, moving from the large corporate environment. So kind of all those things was a nice confluence of events that came together to bring me over to Viv.
It's interesting you said you didn't know what evangelism is. I didn't know what evangelism is till, you know, a couple of years ago.
Right.
I didn't know what it was. And when the opportunity at Viv came up, there's a couple of things, and one of them was evangelism, and I kind of raced out of the web to figure out what the heck are they talking about. And it ended up, it's interesting, because I said I worked at Gap Inc. for many years and did technology strategy. And I spent my whole time thinking about, hey, how do we take this giant retail business and use technology as a business enabler? Right. So I spent a bunch of times, you know, really talking to internal people about, hey, how can we use technology as part of the solution to that problem? Right. And
right.
What can do and that. And everything from colleagues to C-level suite executives and everybody in between. And I realized, I was like, I've actually been doing evangelism, but kind of internal evangelism.
Right.
Right? I've been talking about how technology can help solve a problem for you. And the other thing, I will go back and say, one of the best pieces of career advice I ever got was a boss that I had for a short time at Gap Inc. And he told me, he's like, you know what? He's like, you're all focused internally. You got to go external. He's like, you got to talk to people. You got to go to conferences. You got to go to cocktail parties. You got to do all that. And I was like, that's not me, believe it or not. It's funny because I love doing that stuff now.
Yeah.
And so I kind of forced myself to do it. And at first I was all nervous. I don't know these people. And then I was like, you know, I actually really like this. Like, I like meeting people. I'm pretty extroverted. I like talking about technology. I do that. So, you know, when I went and I said, hey, wait a second, this evangelism sounds pretty cool. It's a combination of how you can still keep your hands on the keyboard and technically proficient and understand what you're doing. But if you'd like to meet people, like to talk to people and interact with them, wow, I don't see a lot of jobs that have that combination.
Yeah.
And this is a really cool combination of being technical, but also being able to talk to people. So I love it. It's funny. I wish I had known about this career path maybe 10 or 20 years ago. Maybe I would have done something different, or maybe not. You know, I never say look back at what you did and do anything different. But I think it's a fabulous career path and something that's a lot of growth and opportunity. And I have had people ask me, you know, what the heck is an evangelist? And I say, well, I don't know. It's an extroverted developer. I don't know. Jonathan, what's an evangelist?
Yeah, you know, I've been at this evangelist gig shorter than both of you, but to me, you know, being an evangelist really is the ideal combination of interacting with people and also coding, right? Because like as a developer, like slinging code all the time, you know, you kind of just live on your computer and then it drives you a little crazy sometimes, like slinging out thousands of lines of code every day or whatever it is, right? And, you know, yeah, I remember, you know, that was my life before I joined Viv when I was working for Samsung Research America. And it's just code, 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 code. And then maybe at lunchtime, I could talk to someone and then back to coding. So, you know, but that's the thing, like evangelism, you know, it's been great because it's not just like interacting with developers or creating content, but it's also a lot of interacting with, you know, other people at Viv, right? Because I find that we're often a conduit from developers to, you know, let's say the platform team or the documentation or the capsule review team. You know, I find myself often conveying like what people have told us to them. And that's also a really rewarding part of, you know, being an evangelist, because we get to see a lot of, you know, things that affect Bixby or changes that have come into Bixby because of, or, you know, partially because of the feedback that we've received and that we've provided as well. You know, kind of being like the frontline people that, you know, deal with the developers and stuff like that. We really see what they go through and see their problems. And also we live their problems too, because, you know, we're the ones working on the platform as well, right? So yeah, it's been a really great combination. And, you know, right now we have a pandemic, so we haven't gotten to go to any of those fancy cocktail parties and those cool events and stuff like that. And, you know, I will say I do miss that part of this job, even though I personally actually don't really like traveling much. But the traveling that I've done for this evangelism job, it's been incredible. It's been awesome, you know, going to all these voice events. Yeah, if I'd known about this job earlier too, just like Roger, you know, I might have gone for it earlier as well. But I didn't know about it until I tried getting a job at Viv as well.
Well, you know, we keep the evangelism name because of me. It's super in vogue in the industry to call it advocacy because, you know, we're the voice of Bixby and Viv to the community. But like you said, Don, like you said, Roger, we're also the voice of the community inside of Viv, right? So it's that dual role, and mostly it's referred to as advocacy because of that, right? It's the external evangelism where you're talking to developers, and it's the internal advocacy where you say, you know, hey, this is where the community's stuck a little bit. This is where we can help. This is how what we can build that'll make their lives easier, and we're that voice back internally. And most companies call that advocacy. I just keep the evangelism title because I love it. And I didn't find it necessary. It's just in vogue in the community of evangelists to call it advocacy now, because you do things. It's not just evangelism, but it's my fault that we keep the evangelism title.
Well, that's why I had to tell my father-in-law when I said evangelism. He's like, oh, so you go door to door and sell technology?
Basically.
In a white shirt and a black tie. And I was like, no. I'm not those people who knock on your door. It just didn't kind of explain it. You know, it's funny, Jonathan, you were talking about coding all the time. I'm going to tell you guys a little secret of people who work with me back in the day. So you guys know I'm an excitable type. And so when I used to code all the time, I was quite excitable. And so I broken a couple monitors when things didn't compile.
Wow.
Slamming a monitor up and down, or throwing a monitor on the floor, actually.
When they didn't build?
When they didn't compile, because I was absolutely sure.
Wow.
Because back here I was developing in Java, that my code was right. And of course, it wasn't. But yeah, I used to be pretty darn excitable when I was coding. Maybe I needed a social outlet.
That's pretty funny. So
going
like
and talking
that,
to people and not writing code all day was my kind of savior from my excitability as a developer. I used to get quite cranky.
Are you like that GIF of that guy like smashing his keyboard and then hitting the computer screen with the keyboard and all that stuff? You know, one of my favorite GIFs of all time.
I neither confirm nor deny these allegedly true rumors. Hey, what about conversational AI and voice? Hey, Jonathan, yeah. You made quite the career switch, mm-hmm. going and becoming a developer, and then joined Viv and was conversational AI and voice. I think that was mainly your first professional experience with that. Tell me what gets you excited about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, conversational AIs are really becoming mainstays within our day-to-day lives. And to me, like, their ubiquitous nature is, you know, really telling in terms of how much impact that they currently have and that they're going to have in technology and in the realm of technology. And it actually really ties back into like Adam Shire's vision, you know, the guy that built Siri, right? I mean, he's kind of the one that made this a reality for us to begin with, in a way. And to be working with him as well, it's incredible to see like the passion and also the usefulness and the vision that we have for voice. And that ties back into, you know, like, what is Bixby's vision and why should we be excited about it? And, you know, there's so many reasons to be excited. And one of the first ones that I can think of is the incredible device ecosystem, right? And, you know, we're seeing progress towards really making that a reality in terms of, let's say, if you do have a lot of Samsung products around, like, you know, I do, right? To have it all tie into a seamless voice experience, you know, where you don't have to go through the usual cumbersome natures of working with whatever a voice that you might be doing to, you know, just have that conversation flow across would be an incredible experience. And yeah, you know, like just with Bixby, I've had to see so many creative ways to make games and things like this as well, which also ties back into one of my original passions. And I've had a ton of fun building like various silly games or fun games and also playing games that the developer community is built. So whether it's based on, you know, the pragmatic aspect of having all your devices work seamlessly, or whether it's, you know, the fun aspect, both those to me seem really promising and exciting as an individual, because, you know, I've just really had a blast making stuff for Bixby and seeing what other people make for Bixby. So yeah, I mean, that's really about it.
Cool. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because one of the things I've always loved about technology is that it kind of enables us to do things better. Humanity to get things done better and quicker. One of the things I dislike is it always gets in the way, right? I mean, it happens to me all the time. I sit down to go check something on the computer and half an hour later, right? And I've kind of been kind of sucked in. And so one of the things that when I first experienced voice and I got an Alexa, like in 2015 or something like that, and I was like, oh, a fun toy, you can talk to it. And then I started thinking about, professionally, I've been thinking, how do we have technology that helps and then gets out of the way, right? And I was like, you know, wow, this is really promising because I can ask it to go do something and have this short interaction with it and it gets it done, but then it's not in my face and in the way and kind of distracting me from doing other things. And I was, and the more I thought about that, the more excited I got about it. And, you know, enough to go, like I said, I left my job at Gap Inc. I had this idea of WordPress for voice was my startup idea and worked on that for almost 18 months. You know, I always say startups, ideas are cheap and execution is hard. We had definitely had some challenges on the execution side. Remember, it was a little early to start a voice startup in 2017, but hey, who knows? But I really like it because it's a really natural way to interact. When we learn to talk by talking where we're mumbling, like as a baby, right? And the first words of the baby are like, mommy or daddy, and you get all excited. But it was a way we learned to talk and communicate with humans. Whereas I had to learn to type and I had to learn to interact with the technology. I had to learn to swipe on my phone and tap. I had to learn the way the technology wanted me to learn. What strikes me with voice is it's the inverse. I know how to talk. Now we're trying to teach the technology how to listen to the most natural way for humans to communicate. And to me, that's really empowering and really interesting. I mean, I don't think voice is not going to take over everything. I think in 10 years, we'll still be typing and swiping and all that. But it really has a bright future because it's so, I'll say, human compared to having to learn how to interact with the technology. And thinking about that, quite frankly, and what the opportunities are and what we can do really gets me jazzed and excited about conversational AI and voice. And that's really the kind of fundamental underpinnings of why I get super excited about that. John, what about you?
You know, I came at it from the other side. You know, having been, I was doing machine learning, just deep machine learning with lots of different companies and lots of different customers, engineering, machine learning solutions. And, you know, I look for confluences of technologies coming together. And I knew that one of the places where humans and computers would work together is on software, because software is something that is going to lend itself more and more and more to being built by an algorithm. It's very boilerplate for the most part. As developers, everybody knows 90% of the code you write is all plumbing code. It's projecting data from one place to another in different forms to another, whether it's a database or a UI or moving it from here to there. You know, the business logic is generally a very small piece of what it is you're building as a software developer. So I knew machine learning and artificial intelligence were going to start working together with humans in lots of different ways. And, you know, I fully expect, I say this on stage all the time, I fully expect to work for an AI CEO or at least an AI assisted CEO shortly, because AIs are going to make decisions better than we are in domains. You already see it in lots of different domains, right? In stock trading and in reading x-rays and all kinds of different scenarios, AI and ML are just going to make decisions better than we do. And software development is another one of those places. It's going to enable us to build software more quickly and more accurately than we ever have been able to do in the past. And Bixby and what the team at Viv Labs built is the first real tangible application I ever saw of that, where you are actually working together with an AI, with a machine learning algorithm to produce something great. And that was captivating to me, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Bixby, it's not just AI for the end user. It's AI is involved in development. And that's really the first time I've seen that combination. There may be other products out there, but that was a big attraction. So we all have this bright future, an amazing future for voice. What about currently? What do you use voice for? What's kind of your favorite things that you've seen? Like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Well, I'm lame. I admit it. You know, when I started working for Viv, I didn't use voice at all. And then I worked for Viv and I said, hey, you know, I'll start asking Alexa or Siri or Bixby these questions and started using it more and more. But I'll admit, you know, I'm a little bit lame. I use the built-in, set an alarm, you know, what's the weather? I use the standard down the middle fastball kind of voice stuff. I haven't really branched out into the more complex usages of voice that are.
I don't know if that's lame or newly converted.
It's newly converted. I see the promise. I definitely see where it's going and what it could be. And I'm trying to get into it. But my kids, on the other hand, use it all the time. They talk to Siri. They talk to Alexa. They talk to Bixby all the time. And so generationally, I see it coming very strongly.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been playing with voice for a bit. And then you go, well, what's your favorite experience? And I was like, well, what do I use a lot? So one thing I really like, there's a capsule, and I'll say it's a skill as well, but it's called Big Sky. It's for weather. And I really like it because it's frankly more accurate. It gives you a little more weather information than what's built in. So I use that pretty much every day. And of course, the cool thing with Bixby is now it's my default weather capsule. But that's a whole nother conversation.
Right.
But the other thing I've been kind of enjoying, so I really like listening to podcasts and they're fun, but you know, they're longer. And you know, just last episode, I interviewed Armel Boudry, who does this platform called Treble FM, and they're all about shortcasts, like these 2-minute kind of get some news information. And Alexa has something called Flash Briefings, really similar. I'll say that I'm a fairly recent convert, but I really like this. Like you can put together like a 10, 15 minute briefing about, okay, I want to know the technology news. I want to know, I'm a huge Warriors fan, although not much happening in basketball right now, like Warriors news. I like the market, what's going on in the stock market. And I can put together these 2-minute little snippets into this 10 minute, hey, what's happening right now? Kind of voice experience. And I've been playing with that and really kind of enjoying it and finding it a way to kind of keep up really quickly with what I like. What about you, Jonathan? What do you like to do with voice?
Sure. So I like to focus on some of the more fun aspects of voice. I do use like, you know, the common stuff, the functional stuff. Like I have a few quick commands that I use regularly to change 6 of my phone settings at once, like when I go to sleep or whatever. But to me, you know, I have found myself making more memes than I would have otherwise, like period, right? Because it's funny because like Alex Wren, the guy that built Meme Generator, Meme Generator is actually the easiest way to make a meme. Currently, like it's easier than using the API that Meme Generator even uses, right? Which is, I think, the Image Flip API. But it's just so optimized to make a meme on, you know, a device. Like doing it with voice is faster than typing it out and dragging little boxes and stuff. That's the fastest, most efficient way that I can make a meme. And there's other things that I kind of hate to say this because it may seem a little narcissistic, but I built my capsules for myself, you know? I built them so that I could use them. So when I interact with people and stuff and kind of introduce Bixby to them, I always use my capsule Copycat, right, to say something dumb to them, right? Or I use my capsule Story Builder to tell them a dumb joke, right? Or if, you know, they like trivia or something, I show them Quizit Trivia. And actually, I play Quizit Trivia, my trivia game, oftentimes when I drive, right? Because it's like, oh, hey, I'm driving, right? This is the perfect time to play a voice game, which in my case, you know, I use Quizit Trivia because I enjoy that trivia game. But there's also some pretty awesome experiences that other developers have built. Like, you know, there's the last winner of Dev Jam, Tempest Rising, and he actually built something pretty crazy for the platform. He built a chess game for it. So if you can remember the pieces without looking at your screen, you could play chess against an AI as well. if you have that, you know, type of mental chess aptitude, which I certainly don't. So I've never tried playing that while driving. But, you know, some of you guys out there, you guys should try it out. But there's just all sorts of fun, interesting experiences on Bixby, which it would be great to see them bubble up more. But we're working on that. But yeah, I mean, those are just a few things that I personally enjoy and use Bixby for all the time. So, yeah.
Hey, Jonathan, I don't think it's narcissistic to build things that you're a passion. I think it's smart. No. No, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, many of the best apps out there are built by someone, they had a passion about something and they built it. Matter of fact, a lot of startup founders started by saying, wow, I found a problem, or I have this passion about this thing and I want to go build it, and I'm kind of building it for myself.
Yep.
And they built it for themselves, and then they realized, this is pretty cool. I think a bunch of other people like it, right? So they released an app to the world, or they even founded an entire startup on the basis of that passion. So if people say, what should you build? I go, what in the world excites you? Go build something related to that. I think that's the smartest way to go build something. And it's a lot more fun to go build something you're passionate about. And really, if you're passionate about something, your passion comes through in what you build. Because people go, oh, well, this is somebody else who's really passionate about, I don't know, exercise. And the way they built their exercise capsule is really shows that they also work out to it. I just think that's incredibly a good way to start. The best way to start is build what you're passionate about, right? A lot more fun, at least. At a minimum, it's a lot more fun. Whether it succeeds or not, in the larger grand scheme of things, it's fun and it's something you use.
Right. At least there's one user of it.
You know? Exactly. One very passionate user of it.
Exactly. Yes.
I'll tell you a good story that I adopted for evangelism. One of my old bosses, when he was telling me questions he uses to gauge aptitude for passion for computers, and this is back when we were looking for passion for technology, he said, I asked people in interviews, how many computers do you have? And always the good answers are like 1.5 or 2.5. So I have my work computer, I have my laptop, and then I have the one I'm building that's kind of in pieces, parts on the floor, waiting for a new video card or waiting for me to put, right? So I have kind of 2.5 computers. And it's the same thing for evangelism. I just stopped. The way I ask about aptitude for evangelism is, show me what you're building. Because I know you're building something. I know you care about something. I know you're building something. I know you're building an app. I know you're building a capsule. I know you're building something. What is it? You know, it's a great, great question to ask for evangelists.
Yeah, so you can help me with my wife, because she wonders about my 10 half-finished technology projects that I have.
Right.
So we've been talking about where we are. What about the next 1 year, 2 years, 5, 10 years? Where do you see voice going? What's going to happen versus where it is today? Don't be shy. Someone can answer.
Go ahead, John.
Sure. You know, I think just kind of fulfilling Adam Shire's vision, really. It's just like making an actual assistant that's not like that you just kind of bark orders at, or just get a single one-stop answer for, like, what's the weather? It's 72 degrees, right? I think something like that is very tenable. And, you know, that's what we're working towards, is creating an actual assistant for you. So yeah, that's kind of what I'm hoping to see, and, you know, what I'd like to see in the next few years.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because your phone and your technology is an extension of yourself. They say it's an extension of your consciousness, right? It brings your consciousness outside of you. And often my kids are arguing about a point, and I look at them and I go, there's no reason for you to argue about this. There's a computer in your pocket that can answer this question in 2 seconds, right? So it's going to be ambient interaction with technology, wherever you are, in your home, in your car, on a walk, at the store. It's going to be technology everywhere as an extension of your capability, an extension of your consciousness. And voice, and particularly AI, are critical to that. You have to be able to speak to this technology, and it has to be able to understand figure out what you're asking. And it has to be able to carry on a conversation because context is everything, right? And so what we're doing and what we're building, it's the future of the way technology is going to work. Technology is going to be everywhere. It's going to be ambient. It's going to understand context, and it's going to understand you, who you are, what you care about. You know, when I say to a computer, hey, I'm watching a model train, am I sitting at a computer looking at an AI model training? Am I looking at a model train going around a track? Am I a fitness model? What the heck do I mean by watching a model train? And only because it understands me and where I am and what's going on at the moment, where if I'm at an artificial intelligence conference, it's going to be, oh, he's watching his machine learning model train. Or if I'm at a hobbies conference, it's like, oh, he's looking at a model train, a little model train, right? Or if I'm at a fitness conference, it's going to know, well, he's probably talking about somebody who's doing some training physically. So, you know, this is where technology is going. And we're building all the component parts that are going to enable that kind of real technology interaction in the future.
Yeah, I so agree with you. That kind of ambient, always around you, and just kind of frictionless way to interface with the tech. Just so empowering. And you're so right, though. For all the advances in AI, I always say that AI is relatively stupid right now, or dumb, and kind of
right,
because it understands patterns in data and it's great at crunching massive amounts of data, but it really doesn't understand well context. And that's the whole unlock, right? About where I am, what I'm doing, who I am. And what an unlock. I love your example, because it's the, for truly to be useful, to have ambient computing, it's going to have to know a heck of a lot about where I am and what I'm doing.
Yes.
Right? And voice is such a natural way to interface with it. But right now, we just bark commands at a voice assistant.
Yes.
I mean, if you try to have a conversation with any voice assistant, it'll fail about interaction two, right? And, you know, because I can say something to you in 10 different ways, and you'll understand it being the same way. And if I said it somewhere different, you'd understand it's different because I'm in a different context than they are. And so AI's got to figure all that out. I'm pretty excited about that because I'm in my car, I'm in the home, I'm in my office. I just talk and have something done and it helps me and it understands where I am and what I'm doing and does something right away. Or it's kind of a long running conversation, right? I start a conversation and then I come back to it. And we do it as humans all the time, right? We talk to someone and we come back and then 3 hours later, you say something and you're like, oh, I know you're picking up that last conversation. Human brains are so good at it. They're not good at processing data. They're good at making these contextual relationship connections and understanding this is equals to this and all these different inputs and all figuring out. As we empower AI to do that, it's going to be a huge unlock to lots of really, really cool stuff.
It's already happening in technology. It's creepy. But if you go into, you know, YouTube, and you search for a particular type of video, the next time you go to Google and you start a search, it's going to auto-complete. It's going to start understanding that, oh, this is what you're interested in, right? So, you know, if you do a lot of searches for fitness videos, it's going to know, you start typing beach, it's going to know you're talking about beach body videos and not going to the beach, because it knows you, it starts to learn what you're interested in. And people find that creepy and off-putting, and I often find it creepy and off-putting too. But I think if done correctly and given people the confidence that it's working for you and not against you, if it's used to target advertisements at you or take advantage of your information or fool you in some way, that's a dishonest use of it. But if I really feel like it's benefiting me, you know, like you said, and it's contextually aware of what I'm doing and who I am to my benefit, I think we'll get over that kind of creepiness hump.
I think you're spot on. Because if it makes it faster and easier for me, it's worth some kind of trade-off there. And it's interesting. I've thought a lot about ads and targeting. And everyone's like, oh my God, On the other hand, wouldn't you like to see ads that you're actually interested in?
Well, yeah. I mean, I do.
So if it's actually stuff, if you're a fitness guy and you want to see a beach body, I'm interested in that. I'd rather see that than ads I'm completely uninterested in. So although advertising becomes kind of the evil outcome of AI, I actually think it might be okay. If it's a lot closer to what I'm interested in, it's a lot, yeah. If you're going to interrupt me and take away my attention, I'm a lot happier if it's something that I am interested in.
Oh, my friends at Facebook are absolutely brilliant at that. You know, when I'm looking at Instagram, it's like, ooh, I want to buy that, or I want to buy that. And I just know if I click on this ad for this cool little thing I never knew I needed until I saw it on Instagram, till Facebook was like, hey, you probably need this freaking thing you never even imagined. I'm like, dang, if I click on that, I'm just going to get inundated with ads about that type of thing. Right. But they are very, very good at targeting things that I'm interested in at me.
I agree. That they're kind of the masters at that, actually. Click away and then you're in the vortex, yep. So to speak. Hey, guys, this has been an awesome conversation. If listeners want to keep in touch with you, what's the best way to do so? If they want to keep on talking about, learn more about what you do, understand more about evangelism, or just keep in contact, what's the best way, John, for people to keep in contact with you?
You know, I'm on LinkedIn, so Don D. Alioto. I'm on Twitter at JP Alioto. I'm pretty much at JP Alioto everywhere on social media, so you can find me there. But LinkedIn or Twitter are probably where I'm most active.
How about you, Jonathan?
Yeah, sure. So you can follow me on Twitter at John without the H. That's J-O-H-N, and then the words without the H. It's a little confusing, but if you look at the name and think about it, I think it makes more sense because you're removing the H from the John to get J-O-N, which is the way you spell my name. So anyway, yeah, Twitter at John without the H. Also, you know, subscribe to our YouTube channel, YouTube.com/C/BixbyDevelopers. That's where I post a lot of tutorial videos and whatever Bixby-related videos that I'm making. So yeah, that's how you can stay in touch with me.
Yeah, I'd say likewise, Twitter at Roger Kibbe, R-O-G-E-R-K-I-B-B-E, probably the best way. You can also find me on LinkedIn. And if you're interested in Bixby, and we'll put all these links to each of your social handles in the show notes, but also for Bixby, at Bixby Developers, on Twitter, on Facebook, there's a YouTube channel, BixbyDevelopers.com. All you got to remember is Bixby Developers. Search for it in your favorite social media site or just in the web, and you will go find us and find out how easy and amazing it is to build for Bixby. So, hey guys, this has been totally different. This has been like the three of us just getting together and kind of shooting the shit, so to speak.
Yeah, thank you.
So thank you so much.
Thanks, Roger.
All right. Thanks, guys. Hey, listeners, I hope these gave you more insight to what the Bixby Evangelism team does. Please reach out to any of us with any questions, comments, or thoughts. And that's all, folks. Till next time, this is Roger Kibbe of the Bixby Developers Chat, signing off.